From Washington, D.C., the American Broadcasting Company brings you Issues and Answers. The Speaker of the House of Representatives is the second most powerful man in Washington, the second in succession to the presidency of the United States. Issues and Answers is proud to present the newly elected 45th Speaker of the House, the Honorable John W. McCormick, Democrat from Massachusetts. Mr. Speaker, here are the issues.
How do you like your new job?
What is the outlook for reviving federal aid to public schools?
Is Congress moving fast enough on the president's program?
And will the president get his Department of Urban Affairs?
Now for the answers to these and other issues from Speaker of the House, John W. McCormick. To interview the Speaker, ABC Capitol Hill correspondents John Edwards, and with the first question, Peter Clapper.
Well, Mr. Speaker, after a month or so, how do you like your new job?
I feel highly honored, of course, that I was unanimously selected by my Democratic colleagues in caucus. I miss my late friend, Speaker Rabin, very, very much. He and I, of course, were not only very close friends, but we were associated together for so many years in Speaker and Majority Leader, respectively. And then we were a team, not only in connection with the conduct and operation of the House of Representatives, but also in maintaining unity in the Democratic Party. Specifically answering your question, of course I'm highly honored by it. I realize the responsibilities of the office. I wish my dear friend Sam Rabin was here and I was still Majority Leader, but God acted. And I'm highly honored, and I hope that I shall perform the duties of the office in the best interest of our country. I shall certainly attempt to do so.
Mr. Speaker, I do want to ask you some issues for which you'll give us some answers, I hope. But first, I'd like to ask a personal thing. When you first were elected to the House of Representatives, did you feel that you one day might become Speaker?
Never. No, never had that thought in mind. Never had the thought in mind some one day I might become Majority Leader. After I was elected, 2 years' service, I was elected to the Ways and Means Committee, of course, which is a very important committee. And if I stayed in Congress long enough, if my district kept me in Congress long enough, and my party was in power in accordance with the seniority rule, I figured someday I'd become chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. But to say, give you a frank and honest answer, that looking ahead, back going back to 1928, that I'd either be Majority Leader or Speaker, no, I never had any thought or expectation.
Mr. Speaker, what's your biggest headache as Speaker now? Getting votes?
Well, of course, you use the word headache. There's many problems there. On a tight vote, an important vote, which is very, very tight, where there's sharp controversy, it's a problem. You might call it a headache. I wouldn't argue with you in trying to convince members who are uncertain to vote in accordance with the party position,
Mr. Speaker, in accordance
with the recommendations of the president.
In connection with that, some observers, some experts on the scene have watched a lot of Congresses, and they are now calling this a slow-motion Congress. Can you deny this and argue it?
Oh, that's some wit developed that, of course. There's no foundation to it at all, because this Congress has acted upon more important legislation to date than has happened for a number of decades in the past. We've already passed in the House the bill increasing the postal rates. Both branches have already passed the higher education bill and is about ready to go to conference. We've got out of the Rules Committee four rules that we couldn't get out of the committee, that were not reported out of the committee last year, like the Manpower and Training Bill. There are several other bills, there are two or three other important bills that have already passed the House or in the process of being enacted into law. So that there's no justification for that remark at all. The evidence warrants an expression that the Congress is moving rather fastly, considering that it's only the first month, practically the first month of this session of Congress.
Care to predict what major legislation will get through Congress this year?
Well, I think proposal of President Kennedy's in relation to international trade will get through. I expect that appropriations that he asked, increased appropriations for national defense, there'll be no difficulty in connection with that. Of course, the international trade is a recommendation in relation to the European common market. We'll get through legislation, educational legislation relating to the colleges and universities. I expect the Manpower and Training Bill to get through. The legislation increasing the authorization in the International Monetary Fund. Legislation relating to the Alliance for Progress. The president will receive a very strong authorization bill on foreign aid and also adequate appropriations, which has always been a source of honest controversy and differences of opinion. And there's many other bills, of course, which will be enacted into law. I look for a very productive session.
Mr. Speaker, when you speak of the college aid bill as the education bill that is going to go through Congress, are you reflecting the sentiment that so many have that the general education program of the president's, particularly his request for aid to public schools, is as dead as a dodo?
No, I wouldn't say it's dead as a dodo. It's going to have difficulty. School construction legislation, even in past years, encountered great difficulty, and I think on two occasions in past years there was a roll call and was defeated. I think back about 3 or 4 years ago it was defeated by 5 votes. I've always voted for such legislation and spoke for such legislation. I'm not giving up hopes in that, but I'll be frank in stating that there's a lot of difficulty in connection with it.
Mr. Speaker,
even without any extraneous, even without anything involved such as the teacher's salary or the provisions with reference to private elementary and secondary schools, but a straight construction bill would have a very difficult time getting through the House of Representatives.
In your opinion...
And I favor it, personally.
In your opinion, is federal aid to parochial schools constitutional?
It's according to what aid, what the provisions of a bill are. I think that loans can be made for the building of classroom, such as been proposed, classroom facilities for the purpose of teaching science, mathematics, languages. I'm not confining it to that. But in my opinion, those are clearly constitutional.
If Congress passes a public general school aid bill without aid to parochial schools, in your opinion, does this mean the end, the eventual end of parochial schools?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Of course not. Of course not.
Well, Mr. Speaker, on this college aid bill, it's, as you, I think, mentioned a few minutes ago, it's about ready to go into a compromise.
Conference,
I should say. What about this scholarship proposal which the Senate proposed but which the House did not act upon?
Well, we put through a bill providing, as you know, for grants in part by the government and loans for the building of classroom facilities. And the Senate changed the grants to a straight loan. They also added the scholarships, the grants for scholarships. Those are the questions, that the main questions and the major questions that will be in conference. In the House, There's no difficulty about scholarships as such, but the difference would be whether they should be grants or loans. I think if the conference committee comes back with a grant provision that we have, while the fight will be harder than when the bill went through the House, where there was very little of any opposition on the building of classroom facilities and the grants and so forth, if the conferees agree on a grant, I think that the House would adopt it. The vote would be much closer, though.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think the Senate proposal was for approximately 200,000 four-year scholarships up to 1,000 a year. Now, you feel that that will have to be considerably watered down to get any House support?
Well, I don't know about using the phrase watered down, but the purpose of...
Let's say a less ambitious program.
Well,
then,
the purpose of conferees is to iron out the differences and trying to arrive at a very effective bill. I think that out of conference will come a real effective bill, both on facilities and on scholarships.
Well, now, there was a third aspect of that college aid bill, which the Senate approved, the proposal to make grants to communities for junior colleges or two-year colleges. That is, for the building of these colleges. How is the House going to act on that?
Well, I'm unable to state now. That's a matter of conference. I would think that if that's included in the conference report, if that's agreed upon, that there wouldn't be much difficulty in that respect.
Mr. Speaker, some people are saying that the outcome of this scholarship issue in the college aid bill will be a test of your leadership. Do you look on it as such?
Well, that's the first I had heard of that, Mr. Clapper. I've seen tests of leadership and one or two other things, but I'd never heard about it being a test of leadership on that.
How about this test of leadership? Getting prying loose from the Ways and Means Committee, the medical care financed through Social Security.
Well, I don't think that that should be considered as a test of leadership. Certainly, all anyone can do is the best they possibly can. That wasn't pried loose last year, as you know. I'm hopeful that a bill will be reported out of the Ways and Means Committee in connection with medical aid for our senior citizens.
You mean financed through the Social Security system?
Yes. I'm in hopes that it will be before this session is over. I'm in hopes that a legislation will be ultimately enacted into law, too, before this session is over. The vote in the Ways and Means Committee is, as I understand it, is 10 for such legislation. The strange thing about that, they're all 10 Democrats. We haven't got one Republican in favor of the legislation. There's 10 Republicans on the Ways and Means Committee, and this is an illustration of the opposition of the Republican Party on a negative, from a negative angle, instead of adopting the constructive role. You think out of 10 Republicans, we'd be able to get two Republican votes who would support, that would vote for such meritorious legislation. If we got two, why, we'd be able to get the bill out, in my opinion.
Well, now you have 10, you say 10 Democrats on the committee favoring it. There are 15 on the committee.
That's true, but the Republican Party has its responsibility. Their role is not one, shouldn't be one under constitutional government of blind opposition. Furthermore, each Republican member is elected to represent their district, and they have their responsibility to the people of their district. So the Republican Party can't very well take the position, well, the Democrats are in the majority, let them accomplish it. We don't have to do anything. Now, when we're in the minority, we didn't adopt that role. The Democrats in the minority always adopted the role which is consistent with our constitutional form of government, to be a constructive party. That when the Republican president, who was a Republican, recommended something we favored, we supported him. We didn't try to block him.
Well, Mr. Speaker, if a Republican were sitting where you are now and I were asking that same question, he would say that his Republican opposition to this is not for the purpose of blocking it and being on the negative side alone. They would say simply that they don't agree with this procedure. from going through Social Security.
Well, it's rather strange that 10 out of 10 members of Republican members of the committee that anyone would take the statement that the whole... There isn't one man out of that or two men out of that who favor this procedure. Yeah, I think the answer to that is very simple. That if we ever get 13 votes on the Democratic side, there'll be 3 or 4 Republicans vote from the committee. Don't worry about that.
Well, then you need 3 more votes to get this bill out of committee.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And if we get 2 Republican votes on the committee, then we'd be in excellent shape.
You think you'll get them?
I can't answer that question.
Are you working on it?
On the Republican
side?
Are
you working on getting those added votes?
On the Republican side? Well, no, of course not.
Mr. Speaker, turning to the urban affairs hassle, which is getting pretty big now, do you think you have enough votes in the House to pass this reorganization plan?
At the present time?
Yes, sir.
Giving you a frank answer, no.
Is there any way you can get those votes?
Well, I'm unable to answer that question now.
When do you expect the showdown on this to come?
I cannot answer that because that's under a situation where the discharge petition has a preferential status. And any member of the House can call it up. The leadership on both sides agree as to a particular day when it will be called up. There's been no discussions on that yet. I expect that within a day or two there will be discussions. So I cannot answer you. No one could answer the question when it will be called up. That's just one of those imponderables where nobody could answer it at this time.
Mr. Speaker, I want to go back to this education plan for a moment. There is another bill on education that's sometimes referred to as adult illiteracy. You had a special committee which has been holding hearings on that. I think the hearings last week brought out the fact that there are perhaps as many as 10 to 11 million people in the country who in many instances, can't read or write. Is this bill going to get the bipartisan support which its backers claim?
Well, I don't know about the bipartisan support, but I would say that the bill has a very good chance of passing. I think it's important legislation. And it's very apparent from the hearings to date that there is a very strong support for the bill, and it appears to be bipartisan in nature to date. I'm hopeful that that bill will be reported out of committee and will be enacted into law.
Mr. Speaker, talking about tests of your leadership, sir, observers see another test coming up for you in the forthcoming House vote on enlarging the House by 3 seats. I'd like to ask this question. Why do you differ with your great predecessor, the late Speaker Rayburn, who opposed this enlargement of the House?
Well, now, Your question is based upon the premise that you might be incorrect.
Well, correct me.
Well, I'm not so sure at the end of the last session that the late speaker was opposed.
What is the basis for the increase of 3 seats?
Well, as a matter of fact, impetus for the bill this year comes from more from Republican sources than Democratic sources. The justification for it is that by reason of the admission of Hawaii and Alaska, in other words, if Hawaii and Alaska had not been admitted, which I strongly supported, 3 states would have lost 1 less member of the House. And it's felt that by reason of the admission of Alaska and Hawaii, that it's equitable and fair to provide for an increase of 438 give the consideration to the states adversely affected by reason of the admission of Hawaii and Alaska, who would not have been adversely affected if they were not admitted. Now, it seems to me, if Massachusetts was not one of the 3, I think there was justice and fairness there. I didn't, last year, I kept very quiet because being majority leader, I felt that one could say that I was charged with self-interest in trying to get the bill through, but if Massachusetts was not one of the three, I would have been advocating it very strongly and very openly last session of Congress, because I felt it was only a matter of justice to the states who were adversely affected.
Mr. Speaker, in enlarging the House...
So this is not a test of leadership now.
All right.
You know, somebody just coined that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, some of my friends who... A few of my friends who start out with preconceived ideas write these things or speak these things. Like I noticed that before the caucus, I used to read articles about me, and I'd say to myself, I wonder if they're writing about me. I even found somebody writing I was a conservative. When I've got probably one of them, there's nobody got a more progressive record in Congress than I have, and I'm very proud of that progressive record. But whoever wrote it started out with a preconceived idea, and he just then, instead of getting the news by asking me or looking for the record, he then just wrote his own views.
On this subject,
and while that going on, as you know.
I'm wondering if this enlargement of this proposed enlargement of the House will lead to a rush by other states to get in on this. So why just three?
I told you the reason. Well, of course, last year there was an effort made to increase it by more, and the efforts through the months, they didn't materialize. I think it's pretty well crystal. Everybody recognized that there was a justice for the three states. There was equity there so far as the three is concerned. There wasn't any much dispute about that. And I think that they, in recognizing that, that's the reason that the committee reported out the bill.
Mr. Speaker, some of the members of the Republican opposition are trying to make a campaign issue out of civil rights. What sort of civil rights legislation, if any, can we expect from the House?
Well, of course, that's rather amusing coming from our Republican friends, because ever since the Civil War, they're supposed to have been the advocates of civil rights, but they never passed a civil rights bill at all since the Civil War. I've listened to my very good friend, the leaders of the Republican Party in the House and the Senate, say, on a few television programs, state that first civil rights legislation in over 80 years passed under President Eisenhower. Well, President Eisenhower signed the bill. He couldn't sign the bill unless Congress passed it. Well, which Congress passed it? It was a Democratic-controlled Congress that passed the first civil rights bill. Back about 3 or 4 years ago. Then the following year, we amended it. So it's the Democrats, even with our division in our party, that's entitled to the passage of the first civil rights legislation that ever was enacted in over 80 years. And yet in the 83rd Congress, with my Republican friends in control of both the House and the Senate, and former President Eisenhower in the White House, they never even reported a bill out of committee, a civil rights bill, not even a title to a bill.
Well,
so that they're the last ones, and they talk civil rights, but when they're in the control, they never certainly produce anything. Now, there's been a survey ordered by the President of the 2,500,000 federal employees to assure equal opportunity in promotion. There's the marks progress made in the field of contracts, particularly companies having contracts with the federal government. There's the Attorney General's action, vigorous action, in relation to the right of people to register and to vote. There's the Equal Opportunities Bill, which has been reported out of committee. So the Democratic Party is the one who certainly is entitled to the credit for the passage of the first civil rights bill in over 80 years. And then there's great progress has been made since that time.
Well, Mr. Speaker, aside from the political aspects, I think most of those items you mentioned were items representing executive action. You did mention this one legislation, this Equal Job Opportunities Bill. It has been reported out of committee. Now, what is the chance for the passage in the House?
I think that the chance of the passage of that bill is very good.
Mr. Speaker, on another political matter, The race in for the Senate in Massachusetts, sir, there's a possibility that your nephew and the president's brother, his youngest brother, may find themselves contesting this. Now, how would this possibly affect your relations with the president, sir?
Well, of course, in the first place, neither one of them has yet announced. And until there is an announcement, why, there's no occasion to make any comment.
Very well, then, turning to the...
But I'll say this much, so there'd be no misunderstanding. Assuming that they do, suppose they both announce, there'd be no change in the relationship. All this talk about a feud with the president is completely erroneous. Again, it's preconceived ideas of a feud. The relationship has been very pleasant. 1952, when he ran for the Senate, I vigorously campaigned for President Kennedy in that campaign. In 1956, with less than 10 minutes' request, I was seconding him, his nomination. Time magazine said that I wrote something about Missouri. It was a falsehood. They got wrong information. It was Kentucky that I asked the late Speaker Rabin to recognize, to change its vote at the end of the second ballot, the president, to then Senator Kennedy. I did effective work in New York in changing its, in 94 and a half votes on the second ballot going for then, for the president, then Senator Kennedy. Texas, Sam Rabin made the motion that Texas vote for then-Senator Kennedy on the second ballot, and he told me he made it because of me and other delegations. I simply refer to this to show that all of this is just trumped-up information, and I'm glad of the opportunity of clarifying the air somewhat. In 1960, the president, then-Senator Kennedy, designated me as director. Out to Los Angeles, and I was happy to do it. I made the motion to suspend the rules on the vice president's nomination. And the relationship is very friendly, so neither one of them have announced, but if it should happen, there'll be no disturbance of our relationship.
Mr. Speaker, we have only about 30 seconds left, but we'd like to hear what you would like us to do in the Berlin air corridors if the Russians persist.
The president has taken a very firm position on that. The only thing the communists respect is what they fear, military strength and power and firmness in foreign policy. And the president has certainly evidenced to the country and to the world that his firm leadership. And I have every confidence that President Kennedy will meet the problem.
Well, Mr. Speaker, thank you very much for being with us today on Issues and Answers.
This has been another in ABC's headline-making series, in which leading authorities bring you answers to the issues of today. Our guest has been Speaker of the House, John W. McCormick. Issues and Answers is produced by Peggy Whedon. Directed by Frank Ford. A presentation of ABC News and Public Affairs.